In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami is introduced at the very end. In the second canto, he begins speaking. And by the time we get to the third canto, it's Shukadeva explaining about what he heard from Vyas, about conversations between Vidura and Uddhava, and then Vidura and Maitreya. So this is directly now Shukadeva Goswami speaking in response to questions of Maharaj Parikshit. So what we covered this morning is there's 10 subject matters of the Bhagavatam, and these 10 subject matters are covered in by a process, by a threefold process, Shrutena, Artena, and Mahatmana, Chandusha. So Shrutena, Shruti means that which is heard. Shrutena is hearing the from Vedic authority. So sometimes when Shukadeva Goswami is speaking, he just declares from Vedic authority something. And Artena, sometimes he's directly explaining, like he's going to do in these coming verses, just directly explaining things as he's heard from Vyas. Or in some cases it's Mahatmana, Anjusha, it's Vedic authorities, great personalities. Maitreya said, Brahma said, different Vedic authorities have said. When Maharaj Parikshit asked the question, oh, this is a very wonderful question. This was asked long, long ago by great sage so-and-so, and when they were, he was discussing with so and he said, oh, this is a wonderful question. The four Kumaras discussed this long ago, and by that method, great souls disclosing transcendental truths, working backwards, sometimes direct explanations, sometimes by reference to the Shrutis or Vedic authority. That's the method of presentation. Then he, Shukadeva Goswami, begins describing these 10 topics. Sarga and Visarga, the creation of the Lord and the sub-creation of Brahma, we discussed that. The Lord manifests ingredients, and he manifests the plan and manifests the creative impetus, and he provides everything, the intelligence, how to put it all together, all fields of technology and engineering in Professor Brahma. No, just use Professor. Professor Brahma. Now you see the reference. Professor Brahma. So, after having all of that, by the Lord's action of Sarga, follows Visarga. That's the sub-creation, and that's the assembling of all the components according to the plan of the Lord, done by Brahma. Now note, please, that these first two, Sarga and Visarga, are dependent upon the personality of Godhead. Krishna, who's the 10th topic of the Bhagavatam, which is Ashraya, or Prabhupada translates as the summum bonum, the Latin word summum bonum, meaning the highest truth. There is no truth beyond the highest truth. And when people ask the rhetorical question, if God creates everything, who created God? The answer is that's a rhetorical question. Because by definition, whatever that which is the source of everything has no source. Anadir Adir Govind Sarva Karana Karanam. Ishvara Karma Krishna. So the point here is that the nine topics, that is everything, and heaven and earth and the spiritual realm, that's everything, matter, spirit, sum total, they're dependent upon the one independent. Even the function of the Purusha avatars of expanding the ingredients that then invests the power of those ingredients to cover and condition and fulfill the desires of the living entities, the struggling living entities. That Purusha avatar function, it comes as a result of the personality of Godhead, Govinda, expanding the Purusha avatars. Prabhupada quotes the Brahma Samhita verse. Yat karanar navajale bhajatisma yoga nidramananta jagananda saroma kupa adhara shaktim avalambya param svamurtim govindam adi purusham tamaham vajami. That is, this Mahapurusha, or Mahavishnu, is a kala vishesha, is a plenary, is a portion of a plenary portion of Govinda. So, in short, the function of the Purusha avatar is to create rests in a partial expansion of Govinda, the original personality of God. Therefore, Govinda or Krishna is ashraya, the shelter of all other things, including the Purusha avatars, including Lord Brahma, and then the other items that are in turn mentioned. This is just review. Poshanam, or protection of the Lord, was described. And how does the Lord give protection? He provides codes of Dharma, and if we stay within the codes of Dharma, we're protected by those codes of Dharma. And unfortunately, most people don't know what is Dharma, nor are they inclined to know, nor are they inclined to follow if they know. This is something that Maharishi Parikshit speaks in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam. After hearing about Vritrasura, and how Vritrasura, although he was the enemy of Indra, he was a Mahabhagavata devotee. So Maharishi Parikshit says, wait, how is this? He was born by the arrangement of Tvashta as a demon. How did he become perfected soul? Said, most persons in this world, they don't have any interest in Dharma. And those that have interest in Dharma, hardly any of them know what it is. And of those that know what it is, hardly any of them follow it. And of those that follow it, hardly any of them understand the purpose behind it. And of those that understand the purpose behind it, very rarely do they attain the stage of devotion. And of those that attain the stage of devotion, hardly any achieve the stage of Mahabhagavata, the topmost perfected stage of devotion. And here's Vritrasura, born by arrangement, by design, as a demon. He's become a Mahabhagavata devotee. How did this happen? Which is very revealing for us to know. How does someone unfortunate, we can't claim to be that unfortunate, we can claim to be unfortunate, but not by design, born a demon, by powerful Brahma making us come out of a fire as the enemy of Indra. We can't claim that. So how does one go from such an unfortunate condition, to Mahabhagavata condition. So the answer to that question is by the mercy of a great personality like Narada. Although it was in his previous lifetime as King Chitraketu, by the mercy of Narada, one can attain Mahabhagavata status without any prior qualification. Just like how Narada achieved the Mahabhagavata status by association with the Bhagavatas, the great personalities who spent time where he and his mother were serving at an inn. And through their association, he achieved Mahabhagavata status. So, in other words, this is what the Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching us, how that stage, literally, the Bhagavatam doesn't want to just teach us how to become good. It's not just it's not a doctrine of morality and ethics. It's rather teaching us how to come to the stage of perfection. Verse after verse after verse, it's pulling us out of that stuck position very powerfully. So all of the other subjects of the Bhagavatam were to bring us to the shelter of the supreme ashraya. The language that's going to come up in this afternoon's verses is Sva-ashraya-ashraya. That's Krishna. He's his own shelter that provides shelter for all others who provide shelter. Like the demigods. That's one of the topics coming up. Adi-bhautik, adi-daivik, and adi-atmik. This personality of Godhead is providing shelter for all of them. The adi-daivik personalities, the demigods, they provide shelter for others. They provide shelter for others, but their shelter and their ability to provide shelter for others is from Krishna. Svavashraya-shraya. So it's going to get a little technical. I'm just preparing you for that. Gently. The main thing to keep your attention on while the scenery starts to move around, just like life. You sit down and chant your rounds, and then you get up and start your day and things start moving around. Even when you're chanting around, your mind is moving around. Even before you start. So, keep shelter of the personality of Godhead. Just because it fits this discussion, just before coming here, we were speaking about, before visiting here, speaking to a group of devotees on this point of achieving perfection. And there's prayers that are offered by pure devotees for the Lord to please remove obstacles. So the devotees were volunteering that when I'm trying to perform my devotional service and I see there's some obstacle, then it's within me, and I very enthusiastically go about the business of trying to address that obstacle, what I find is my enthusiasm slips, you know, because the obstacle doesn't budge. And then I become discouraged, and not only become discouraged, I lose track of everything. And that's because, so that what to do? What's the remedy? Like filling up a bucket, and as you're filling up the bucket, it's empty very soon because it's got some holes in it. We all have that experience. We get some enthusiasm, some inspiration to go forward in our Krishna consciousness, some good association or some wonderful kirtan or some wonderful festival or something. you read something very wonderful, something Krishna very kindly, again and again, supplies inspiration. And with that inspiration, we go to make further progress, and before we know it, we're stalled in the road again. Something happened. Bucket emptied out. I don't know. Where's the holes? Thought I fixed all the holes. It's this point that the same as in the structure of this 10th chapter, we need to keep our attention on the personality of Godhead and serving Him. And whatever we may do to try to improve our devotional service, that's just a function of trying to serve Him. So, like Shukadeva Goswami, the nice example from the Bhagavatam, one of them, is when Shukadeva Goswami was asked a question by Maharaj Parikshit, which Maharaj Parikshit already knew the answer to, but he wanted to hear it from Shukadeva Goswami, not just for redundancy, but because he knew that Shukadeva Goswami would lift him to the platform of realization, because that's the platform that Shukadeva Goswami was on. He had the information, but he didn't have the realization. And Shukadeva Goswami had the information and the realization, but he didn't just, okay, here it is. But he fixed his mind upon the personality of Godhead, and verse by verse by verse by verse by verse, just continuing in a row, he's praying to the personality of Godhead, offering his obeisances, offering his prayers, requesting the Lord, please give me the capacity to speak in such a way that Maharaj Parikshit will realize the subject matter that he has asked about. And verse after verse after verse, fully depending. He's got the connection. He doesn't lose the connection because his consciousness is upon the personality of God. He's a Krishna addict. He's just, his consciousness is absorbed in Krishna. Like we just observed Radhastami, Radharani. When she speaks to the bumblebee, she's in madness. She can't even distinguish the bumblebee from Uddhava. He's talking to the bumblebee as if he's Uddhava, and talking to Uddhava as if he's a bumblebee. She can't even distinguish. She's so absorbed in thought of Krishna, and chastising the bumblebee. You're the unreliable servant of an unreliable master. Just like your master, you go sit on one flower, take some honey, and before you know it, you fly off to another flower and sit and take some honey, drinking the honey, and then fly to another flower, just like your master, who comes and gives his association to us gopis. We surrender everything, our lives, our families, our everything, and the next thing you know, he's gone. Get out of here. You're the unreliable servant of an unreliable master. I don't want to hear about Krishna anymore. Stop talking about Krishna. Krishna, Krishna. Stop talking about Krishna, Krishna. She can't stop talking about Krishna. Those young women in Mathura must now be charmed by the beautiful face of Krishna with beautiful lotus eyes and such a wonderful smile. And with his beautiful eyes and wonderful smile, he must be charming their hearts. But they're not simple village girls like us. Krishna's probably having difficulty winning them over. But on the other hand, Krishna's praised by everyone, not just by us in the village of Vrindavan. He's praised by great sages and saintly personalities and perfected souls. Krishna is even charming the goddess of fortune. But we're more intelligent than the goddess of fortune, because we know what kind of character Krishna has. He's not to be trusted. The goddess of fortune, she may be charmed by Krishna, but as far as we're concerned, Mr. Bumblebee, go away from here and stop talking about Krishna. Krishna, 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 Krishna. Absorbed in Krishna. And Shukadeva Goswami is like that, absorbed in Krishna. From the example of such personalities, Uddhava, coming in the third canto. Vidura just asks the social question, like, oh, you've been on pilgrimage. You must have gone to Dwarka. How's Krishna? And the members of the Yadu dynasty, all the relatives of Krishna. Even Vidura already knew that they've gone. He couldn't say it. So he asked the question. And he pressed Uddhava's Krishna button. And three chapters of Krishna, Uddhava speaking about Krishna. Krishna, 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 Krishna. How wonderful is Krishna? Krishna in Vrindavan, Krishna out of Vrindavan, Krishna here, Krishna there. Intimately relishing. He hasn't even answered the question yet, he's just talking about Krishna. Similarly, the Srimad Bhagavatam wants us to take shelter of Svaashraya-shraya, the shelter of all those who give shelter, who has no other shelter but himself, because he's the source of everything. So when we're engaging in our devotional service, how do we always think of Krishna? If we're attached to Krishna, we're going to always think of Krishna without some extra binary process going on. You're engaged in your work and you don't check out from doing your work and start to think of Krishna. And then turn the channel and then think of your work and don't think of Krishna. But when there's attachment from the platform of the heart, you're thinking of Krishna. And that attachment for Krishna, it's described. It's one of the 10 topics. Where, just like there's one of the 10 topics is impetus for work is the desire to enjoy the results of fruitive activities. So, Uttaya is one of those activities, but side by side with Uttaya, so we can understand what's fruitive activities, we're also given Svadharma, or the activities that take us to the Supreme Abode. And by hearing about the Supreme Abode and hearing about Krishna, who is the predominating personality of the Supreme Abode, that awakens that impetus for returning there. So the Bhagavatam is describing all of these things. And again, these are of the 9 topics. And what are these? The purpose of these 9 topics? To come to the position of attachment to Krishna. Regardless of our janata agha, even if we're in this category as citizens of Kali Yuga, we're unfortunately surrounded by sinful activity and for so long in our lives been engaged unknowingly in many cases, even knowingly in some cases, in sinful activities. Because it's such a contaminating age. How are we to approach the Supreme Pure? We're so contaminated by this Kali Yuga atmosphere. Try to find something pure. Good luck. What, but even try to find something you can offer to Krishna that's pure. Good luck. You really have to do gymnastics to, you know, just get pure water. Or look at even, you know, nice vegetarian foods. Genetically engineered and pesticides and so many nasty things. You offer that to Krishna. organic milk given from cows. You know, you just take any one thing. And just try to find purity and to offer to Krishna. It's so hard. It's some occupation that has no compromise to it. It's so difficult. So, what to do? The internal purification is required. So, text 5, the science of God describes the incarnations of the personality of Godhead and his different activities, together with the activities of his great devotees. This is where we ended up. So that's one of the topics in the Bhagavatam. It's one of the topics in a Mahapurana, describes the activities of the avatars. It would be, the Mahapurana would be incomplete if it didn't have that description. It's not only the Srimad Bhagavatam that describes about Krishna. The other Sattvic Puranas also describe the Leelas of Krishna. They describe different parts of them. They describe them in a different, slightly different perspective. But they're described. And the devotees of the Lord, because the devotees are in association with the Supreme Lord, they're also pure, and hearing about them is as good as hearing about the Lord. It's the same as hearing about the Lord, because their activities aren't disconnected from the Lord. So these are topics of the Bhagavatam. Then text number 6. The merging of the living entity along with his conditioned living tendency with the mystic lying down of the Mahavishnu is called the winding up of the cosmic manifestation. One of the 10 topics is Nirodha. Nirodha. In the word for word, the winding up of the cosmic manifestation, or going back to the first verse, which is where these are identified. Nirodha is going back home, back to Godhead. Now there's a difference between, this is the Sarga is described, the creation of the Lord, the sub-creation of Brahma, the positioning of the planets, sthanam, so the fifth canto Bhagavatam, how it was, Vedic cosmology, and then the laws to govern the upliftment of the living entities, poshanam, the manus and the descendants of the manus, lineages of the manus and the kings coming from them, just that some history. And Isha Katamritam, the topics of the Lord and their incarnations, the winding up of the creation, the Arodha, the living entities, and all the sum total ingredients are again dissolved within the body of the Lord. It's really far out description. Very far out description. It's like the reverse of the unfolding of the ingredients that are described in this canto earlier, and then again in the third canto with Kapila Dev describing how from subtle different stages of grosser manifestations, all coming from subtle, and the reverse is the gross folds into the more subtle, folds into the more subtle, folds into the more subtle, and it becomes the unmanifest state and back into the body of Mahavishnu. It's gone. And a long resting period. Then again, manifest again. Everything is cyclical, so it's the manifesting and the withdrawing. Liberation and then the ultimate shelter. Those are the topics. Liberation is the permanent situation of the form of the living entity after he gives up the changeable, gross and subtle material bodies. The gross body is certainly changeable. The subtle body, in one sense, is equally changeable. How fast does the mind change? Really fast. But then at the same time, the mind accompanies the soul, the subtle body, mind, intelligence, and false ego, accompany the soul to the next external body, gross body. But that's also temporary, because at least through the bhakti process, Kapila Dev describes in the Sankhya section that through the process of bhakti, the mind dissolves. Won't that be nice? No more material mind. Hey, no more material mind. We'll still have a mind. We'll still have thinking, feeling, and willing, but not with this moderator thing going on, telling us, no, you do want this. Enjoy this way, that way. Now feel unhappy. Now feel happy. Now feel unhappy. Gone. Attraction and repulsion for sense objects. Gone. That's freedom. Just a couple of comments from Prabhupada's purport. The material cosmic creation is manifested to give the ever-conditioned souls two kinds of facilities. One facility is that the conditioned soul can act according to his tendency to lord it over the cosmic manifestation. Okay, so what's the other facility? The other facility gives the conditioned soul a chance to come back to Godhead. Hey. The twofold purposes of material creation are these two. To give the living entity an opportunity to try to enjoy independently from Krishna. The other is to realize that's not possible. And there's a much better choice, and that is that's a function of this cosmic manifestation. Like a prison, Prabhupada compares, has two purposes: to restrain the living entity from hurting others, but they can still live, but actually it's for reformation. When, as parents, you have to do things in relation to your children that might be a form of discipline, it should be done in a loving way, and actually that's the purpose. It's for formation of character, if there's some discipline. About a little more than a week ago, I can't even remember, I lost track of time. A little more than a week ago, I was in Dallas at SMU, Southern Methodist University, making a presentation on leadership from a spiritual perspective. And one of the points that I made was this point. That is, one who has a position of leadership over others, or one that's by character, not by title, but by character, a leader, is when making decisions of what to do and how to do, will be based upon how character will be elevated in this exchange with others. Not just so I can get things the way that I want them, because that will mean happiness and the present situation is unhappiness. And I want happiness. I want my happiness. That's not what leadership is. That's not what Krishna does. That's not what the scriptures do. If there's some restriction or prohibition, it's for elevation of character. If there's some injunction, it's for elevation of character. Prabhupada said the whole of our training in Krishna consciousness is inculcation of character. Like the whole formula for Gurukula, which applies to how Prabhupada was training us, is for this one thing, formation of character. Because from the character or the qualities that we carry, swabhava, comes everything. All of our activities, what we say, what we do, what we don't say, don't do, it's like the control valve for life. The quality of life that we live is based upon the character that we have. Spiritual education is formation of character. It's intended to be on the spiritual level. Not just modifying behaviors, but bringing real consciousness of Krishna, connecting with Krishna, soul to the Supreme Soul. And then the natural fulfillment of spiritual potential comes out. That's real character. And the design of the world, and along with the world that's created, the codes of the Vedas, it's all for that purpose. Same, the 9 topics all for this one topic, to take shelter of the personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada also writes, the material, gross and subtle forms are simply due to the conditioned soul's ignorance. Ignorance, ignoring Krishna. And as soon as he is fixed in devotional service to the Lord, he becomes eligible to become freed from the conditioned state. And freed from the conditioned state, it's both subtle and gross. It means on the soul level. And even the body becomes no longer necessary. When the body is necessary to fulfill desires separate from Krishna. If we have no longer desires separate from Krishna, we don't need material bodies anymore. There's this painting, maybe you've seen, with the devotee chanting on his japa beads and zooming through space. And there's planets on either side, and there's a rocket ship going above him, and off in the distance is the spiritual world. But Prabhupada was describing, and the artists captured the message that Prabhupada was describing, that when the soul leaves this body, it's like in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where Gopu Kumar is passing to the Vaikuntha region, and he sees all the places over this side, there's Indraloka, oh look at that. Over there is Brahmaloka, oh look at that. Just if there's any desire to enjoy in those realms, the soul descends and takes birth there. We get a body to enjoy the facility. And even if it's just curiosity, I wonder what that's like. Just check it out. Little, you know, curiosity item over here. If there's a trace. So, you know, that sounds like formidable. We have to have no material desire. What's the hope for me? No material desire? No material desire? Not even a trace. But as one progresses in Krishna consciousness, the realization of the all-attractiveness of Krishna is very compelling. And again, the Bhagavatam is wanting to pull us to that position of perfection of life. If we study the Bhagavatam very carefully, hear it very attentively, that's where your consciousness goes until the bucket with a hole in it phenomena starts. And that's because we don't stay with our shelter on the upon the personality of Godhead, because we have so many other options going for us. Until that reformatory thing, that's not a real path of happiness. There's a big bully down at the other end ready to beat me up. And I didn't like that. Let me try another one. Till we realize its path of independent enjoyment is not what it appears to be. It's illusion. It's a bad program. So the reformatory process is there. How about just turning up the volume? That might do it. Somebody know how to do that? Okay. Text number 7. The Supreme One, who is celebrated as the Supreme Being or the Supreme Soul, is the supreme source of the cosmic manifestation as well as its reservoir and winding up. Thus, he is the supreme fountainhead, the absolute truth. So that's the 10th topic, summum bonum. So in essence, all of the other topics of the Bhagavatam are to help us take shelter of the personality of Godhead. And is this a matter of scholarship? Like you have to be very smart. You have to get, where'd he go? You have to get really good SAT scores or you can't go back to Godhead? No. Not a matter of that kind of consideration. Your grade point average has to be such and such, or you can't go back to Godhead. You have to have so much money, or you can't go back to Godhead. You have to be born in a certain land, or you can't go back to Godhead. You have to be a certain gender, or you can't go back to Godhead. You have to be born a certain caste, or you can't go back to Godhead. None of those. And what's the qualification? Take full shelter of the personality of Godhead. And each of these are impetuses to help us appreciate just who the personality of Godhead is. Otherwise, one might not have such a strong impetus, or one might hit the wrong target just because of poor fund of knowledge. And there's a lot of poor fund of knowledge existence going on, including in our own lives, but we all have experience. When we try to present Krishna consciousness to people that don't yet know, we find there's a lot of other ideas out there in this spiritual marketplace that people think just one recent one. Traveling in the same plane with a whole lot of other people, and we went to get our bags. One well-educated, you know, apparently pious, wealthy, well-to-do, well-dressed at least, Indian gentleman came up and, you know, started the conversation saying, you were on the same flight, you just came from Dallas? And I said, yeah. And he looked at me through his spectacles and said, Jesus loves you. I mean, with that kind of a tone. I smiled and said, and Krishna loves you. And he turned around and said something I'm not going to repeat about Krishna. And I said, you know, it was a moment of decision. What am I going to do about this person? Because it's offensive. And he's hurting himself by being offensive. So, anyway, rather than play by play of what happened after that, we had some interchange back and forth, and I wanted him to understand that offensive behavior and speech towards the personality of God is going to hurt you. You should give it up. And if you can't give it up, I'm moving. And if you persist, I'm calling the police. And he didn't get more nasty. He just continued with the same barrage. Anyway, there are lots of different, you know, lots of different ideas of God out there in the world today. Some very strange ones. So, the Bhagavatam helps us to get to that position of shelter in Krishna. I didn't get very far into the chapter, but what I wanted to do is introduce this next topic. The section of the verses goes from 1 through 9, I just discussed through 7. 8 and 9 deal with adhyatmic, adhibhautic, and adhidaivic. Now, many of you are studying Bhagavad Gita in your Bhakti Shastri course, yes? And these terms appear in Bhagavad Gita in chapter 8. Can anybody assist us with some explanation of what chapter 8 Bhagavad Gita says about adhyatmic, adhidaivic, and adhibhautic? And if you need some help, I can help you, or we can just read it. And then I want to connect it with the Bhagavatam, what the Bhagavatam says. And it's very important because the next 10 verses of the Bhagavatam after these two explore the topic in very technical ways. So let's see if we can get a high level, simple level, principle kind of understanding of what these three are. Adhyatmic means? Okay. Now you took it one step further. Adhyatmic is adhyatmika klesha. Miseries that arise from body and mind. And adhidaivic kleshas are miseries that arise from daivic. Adhidaivic. Yeah. And adhibhautic miseries that arise from other living entities. Like mosquitoes and bugs and children that don't behave. not that. Okay. So here's what Krishna says in chapter 8, text number 3, Bhagavad Gita. This is definition. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, the indestructible, transcendental living entity is called Brahman, and his eternal nature is called Adhyatma, the self. Action pertaining to the development of the material bodies of the living entities is called karma, or fruit of activities. Text 4. O best of the embodied beings, adhibhautika. O best of the living beings, the physical nature, which is constantly changing, is called adhibhuta. Adhibhuta, the material manifestation. The universal form of the Lord, which includes all the demigods, like those of the sun and moon, is called adhidaiva. And I, the Supreme Lord, represented as the super soul in the heart of every embodied being, am called Adiyagya, the Lord of Sacrifice. So, the next verse is, and one who quits his body remembering, anta kale jamam eva, smaran muktva kalevaram. One thinks of me at the time of death, he attains my nature at once. Of this there is no doubt. Sangshaya. So, that's the little introduction in Bhagavad Gita of these three. And so one more time. Adiatma is the self, the soul proper. Adibhauta is the material nature that in contact with the soul desiring independent enjoyment from the Supreme, it impels one into fruitive activities of different descriptions. And Adidaiva is within the universal form of the Lord, those beings that help oversee the affairs of the creation, the managers of the affairs of creation, the administrative overseers of creation. The Bhagavatam speaks in a slightly different way, but the language is different, but the principles don't change. Here's the language of the Bhagavatam. The individual person possessing different instruments of senses is called the Adiatmaka person. And the individual controlling deity of the senses is called Adidaivik. The embodiment seen on the eyeballs is called Adibhautik person. So it's the same principle. These principles are discussed elsewhere in the Bhagavatam and elsewhere in the Vedas. So it's a Vedic concept used and perceived from different perspectives. The function here, just like it says very quickly in Bhagavad Gita, and Adiyagya, the living entity and the senses and the demigods all work in concert to perform sacrifice unto Vishnu. You can't perform sacrifice unto Vishnu by the Vedic process without senses and without the presence of a soul and without the governing deities. The Vedic processes are like that. Because the demigods invest power in the senses. Like Prabhupada's example is, you can't, even involuntary actions like blinking, you can't do without sanction. And so all the controlling affairs of the universe, it's under the jurisdiction of a demigod, the power of the senses. So, like in the unfolding of the elements, the sun manifests light without which you can't see. So the presiding deity of sight is the sun god. If the sun god removes his benediction upon the powers of the eyes to see, then you can't see, even if there's light. So the point then is, when it's describing the senses, it's not just the physical instrument like the ear and the eye and the tongue, but when the Vedic conception of the senses that are manifest by the demigods, it's the power, like the power of locomotion. You might lose your legs, but then you can get crutches, or you can get a wheelchair. And the capacity of the living being to move from one place to the other is its power of locomotion. The instrument may be this or that, but it's the power of locomotion. Oh, so like, you know, the hearing may go bad. You can put another instrument on to help the hearing. It's like a machine part. If your alternator goes bad, you get another alternator, put in the alternator. And you can run the car, or a generator, or a fan belt, or because it does some cooling. So they're different. The machine is one thing, but the subtle power of the sense, because the machine is adibhautik, this power of the sense is adidaivik. And if you have the instrument, you have the ear without the power of hearing given by adidaivik, doesn't work. The message here is all three are necessary. They're all interdependent. But then what empowers that interdependence, or what sets up the interdependent system? It begs the question. If this is dependent upon this is dependent upon this, it's like the irreducible complexity argument, that if you need so many parts to make something work, how do you get all those parts together? There has to be something that's the causal principle before that all the parts work together. Yes? I'll go down that path one. Their example has become like a classic mousetrap. You have to have five parts, and if you have four parts but one part is missing, take any one of the parts. Any one of the four parts, one part is missing, and you don't have a mousetrap. So first is getting the parts, and then assembling the parts. So their example is a mousetrap is an irreducible complex system. You have to have all five parts put together in a certain way. Now, where does that interdependence of those parts come from? It's a design. The inference by logic is there's a design, and the inference of that is there's a designer. So take that same and into the Vedic model that is being presented here in the Bhagavatam, and you have these three, adidaivik, adibhautik, and adiatmik. You have a soul that wants to enjoy. Good luck. If there's no senses, okay, now there's a soul and there's senses, but there's no power of the senses. Good luck. You need adidaivik. So the Lord provides adidaivik, but take away any one of those three, the interdependent system, one of the three is missing, just like the five of the mousetrap, and it doesn't work. You can have a soul without the other two, or have the adidaivik. Where the adidaivik is missing, the adiatmik is missing, adibhautik is missing. So they're all interdependent, but the good news is there's an independent that's not dependent on anything else that empowers the three interdependent entities to function together. So all of this discussion is leading there. Just like the discussion in Bhagavad Gita chapter 8, text 3 and 4, it's leading to the shelter of the personality of Godhead, Adi Yajna. Just like going back to the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, in the beginning, he's the source, so in the beginning of creation, I send forth generations of men, adiatmik, and demigods, adidaivik. And of course, with creation, it means the ingredients, you know, the instruments, because Brahma put, he assembled everything, he's the engineer. And he put all the instruments together, there's bodies with different instruments of perception. And the power of perception, and the living entities. And said, okay, boys, you can enjoy. But you should do so by this process of sacrifice. And you try to enjoy without the process of sacrifice, and guess what? You don't get enjoyment. In fact, you get a lot of suffering, and your prison sentence continues lifetime after lifetime. There's no end to it. Be thou happy by these acts of sacrifice. So he's at a yajna. And the whole purpose of the codes of the Vedas connected together with impetus for creative activity, that is, I want to enjoy. You put the two together with Adiyagya and you get elevation. Elevation to the point at least where one can have an attraction for hearing the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. But this process of sacrifice is very much missing in this age of Kali. People are making sacrifice, that is, they're undergoing hardship, not for satisfying Vishnu, but for satisfying their senses. And what does it lead to? It leads to a very low quality life, very degraded life. And increasingly so. Some of you may have thought, you know, raise your children in India. The because of the growing, just one fact, just one, there's so many facts, but one fact is the number, I read this when I was in Hyderabad. How many people today, this was in about 4 years ago, how many people today in India are vegetarian compared to, you know, 20 years ago? Big drop. I mean, the number before was reasonable. It was still low, but it was still reasonable. It has dropped enormously. And then the questionnaire of why the people decided to change from non-vegetarian, from vegetarian to non-vegetarian had nothing to do with religious values. It just had to do with money. Now they have enough money and so they can afford to be non-vegetarian. It wasn't that religion was restricting them, it was money. And with the increase of the economy of India, guess what? Vegetarianism is going to greatly reduce, not disappear, because there's some that will maintain vegetarian for another reason. But that level is quite... And what's going to happen? You know, the upholders of Hindu Dharma are going to be very bewildered. But why are people holding up? And the rate of conversion from Hinduism to so many other things. This is... social commentary now, it's not Bhagavatam, but it's the Indian government has specifically told that 2 years ago at our GBC meeting, one man from the central government of India called to our GBC meeting to speak one of our GBC members and said, I really hope you have a good meeting. He said, because you're the only hope for India today. The face of India is so rapidly changing, the values and the behaviors of people so rapidly changing because of the conversion of Hindus to other things. You're the only one that's growing. Have a good meeting. Because our culture is going to be in 10 years unrecognizable. This is a governmental person. Now maybe he's an alarmist, and maybe not. But what I've seen is that the quality is changing so rapidly. And ever even more so through the increase of the economy. Because people then have access to things that are degrading that they didn't have before. Something like 10 years ago, Sridhar Swami, our sannyas godbrother, said in a lecture in New York, over how many centuries, certainly decades, but centuries, have foreign invasion tried to change the culture of India, and it was unsuccessful until today. Within a short period of time, five-star TV has destroyed the culture of India. so, I mean, technology is, and now it's going to be more and more and more available. So where's the shelter? What's going to hold that fabric together? Message of Srimad Bhagavatam. The sages of Naimisharanya, they understood it in the first chapter of the first canto. Now that Krishna has left, where are religious principles to be found? Where is there going to be shelter? So things to some degree have been maintained by tradition, but even those that are following some tradition, they don't know why they're following that tradition. And give them another option, and they're following something else. So many people, so rapidly. It's really incumbent upon those that have the opportunity to receive Srimad Bhagavatam to receive it fully, and have real shelter, and have spiritual answers to these questions of decisions that people have to make in life. I'll give one example. Just recently happened. Again, it's social commentary, but it makes it real, in real time. I was at Illinois Institute of Technology just after I was in Dallas, and one student after the class came up and said, I'm an Indian fellow. He's one of the organizers of the club, the Bhakti Yoga Club on campus. He said, I'm an officer in student government, and we just were having a discussion about spending $1 million of student fees. The students, they pay some fees, and then the government decides how to spend it. So they were talking about creating a recreation center for the students out of the students' money. So then what would go into that recreation center? And there were three things being considered, and it was the decision was made all three should go in that center. Some kind of little cafeteria with because there's a lot of Indian students there, some vegetarian as well as non-vegetarian things. A bowling alley. I don't know how many people bowl anymore, but a bowling alley in IIT. And the third thing was a bar. And here's this young Indian student, graduate student, on the student government, having to take part in a decision about having a bar with government money. I mean, tax money. It's public money. It's not his money. But he's on the... So, what should I have done? Now, how would you advise somebody? He was saying, one option is I could have just quit because I don't want to take part in this thing. But another option is exercise spiritual leadership. Take the message that you've heard in the Srimad Bhagavatam and not yell at people, but have them understand this idea that when we have the responsibility of others' money, the decision that we make should be based upon what is going to elevate their character. Is this going to elevate people's character? Because you have public money. It's like, what you do with your own life is one thing. What you do with other people's lives is another thing. As a leader, are we not supposed to be leading? Or are we just supposed to be pandering to the senses? So, that's a function of when we make decisions in our lives for ourselves and our families and our friends, what's going to be elevating to the character of ourselves and others that we're exchanging with? It's not a matter of even title. You don't have to be on the student government to make, to speak such message. It's just, by your life you're speaking some message. And so, extend, not in a, this was the advice that I gave. It was too late because they had already made the decision. $1 million is going to be spent. including a bar. So there's bars all over the place, all around this campus. I've seen them. You know, so that not that you're depriving people of something that they want, but you don't have to provide that. And, you know, speak with conviction based upon principle. So that's a particular example of, you know, in the course of our lives, living in this world, it's one thing to speak ethics. It's another thing that you actually have shelter in Krishna, and you're speaking from the platform of the soul, and the language may be not so direct depending upon your audience. In this case, we can be very direct. But when your social exchanges with others, you may have to phrase in terms that others can understand. That's okay. But if you have shelter, just like Prabhupada, he didn't have a scientific education, but he could speak with any scientist and completely dismantle their position. In many cases, they accepted. In some cases, they refused. But it was very clear that they were dismantled. Not because of having, you know, a very technical scientific education, but being very clear in the principles of Srimad Bhagavatam. We study very carefully the principles laid out in Srimad Bhagavatam, and we're prepared to be elevators of the character of others. Not just we'd win an argument, and now that's our objective of life, is get in arguments with people and win. But to bring about transformation of character. And that's going to take place as much as these principles are understood and people can move from the no shelter to shelter in Krishna position. So, like Shukadeva Goswami, let's conclude with this. When we're called upon, after carefully studying Srimad Bhagavatam, to help persons understand themselves and just even take this adibhautik, adidaivik, and adiatmik. These are interdependent principles. How you can perceive a person. We'll discuss it more detail this evening. But how you perceive a person is very much influenced by, do you understand the shelter of that person, or the body, or those that are regulating the affairs of the body, the demigods? When that perception or consciousness is clear, then you can be like Shukadeva Goswami, not only giving the information that's necessary, but fully depending upon the personality of Godhead, Yajñapati, in the second canto language, or Adi Yajna in the Bhagavad Gita language, take shelter of Krishna to enable praying that the words that you're speaking to others will help to bring them to the realization. We must take shelter of Krishna. So, any comments or discussion?
That was very good. Actually, this put me a thought, which is two follow-up questions I have. Let me come up with a scenario, a realization what I had. This Monday, there was the India versus Pakistan cricket match.
Oh, really?
let me tell you why I'm saying this, and then I have two questions. Off late, I was trying to get out of cricket, even though like I've been so used to cricket, and that's not really. I still somehow get into it, even though I want to, divert my attention away from cricket. It happened during the final. It was one of the some World Cup sort of a match, and then
okay.
I was trying to restrain myself not to get into it. But in the office itself, like everybody was getting into it. the match was so tense, it has to go the last over, and...
I don't even know what that means. Go ahead.
Okay. That's a scenario. The question I have is, I realized, so when I got into it, so I had to go into the last over, I have to see how, you know, how many runs were scored, and how many wickets and all that. I was just thinking, the concentration what I had at that point of time, so amazing. My focus was not even any call, telephone, nothing. So focused on the cricket match, what's going to happen, whether India will win or not. India won.
In the job.
No, not in the job. Yeah. Why it is not happening? Well, I want to have the same concentration in chanting. That's not happening. My mind was able to focus on that particular match, ball by ball, what's happening. But whereas in chanting, it's not happening.
Even though mantra by mantra. You know,
yeah, that's one. And then coming back to your the discussion what we have in terms of filling the holes in the bucket. It's trying to fill the holes, but this is a scenario where, you know, we think that hole is not filled, you know, like saying one more big hole coming up. Like, you know, I'm trying to say, okay, I'm okay, I'm progressing, but the excellent environment once again pushes me out, even though I know it's not good, this is not the way I'm supposed to go. But somehow, like, you know, I get pulled into it. My bucket with the once again hole appears, crack appears, or, you know, how do we address that? That's.
In the beginning, we should start with the first kind of thing. In the beginning, transcendental knowledge helps, and practice helps. And withdraw the mind from, and tolerate the itching. Prabhupada describes that, you know, this attraction for something is like an itch. And, you know, the more you think about the itch, what happens? You can be just be unconscious. You're just scratching. You're just not even aware. This is material, but the beginning is knowledge. I went to a dermatologist in the course of traveling because I had some skin rash. I didn't know what it was. I was concerned that it might be something more serious than just some temporary rash. So while I was at the dermatologist, this 80-year-old, very nice, well-educated man, he had these very interesting signs all over the room, you know, slogans and things, and, you know, I just kind of offhand commented, you know, said this is like a collage room. You got all this stuff, and he explained why. He said there are many studies where it shows that if people's attention go to something else, then they may be under a lot of pain, but they won't even feel the pain because their mind is on something else. That's, you know, that was the short explanation that he gave. It's just to distract his patients from being in a pained situation, so he can treat them. And, you know, have a nice conversation rather than, you know, a moaning conversation. He elaborated on it. He gave a particular case study of something. So, if we can tolerate that, and there's an instruction to do so, then something that's irritating the body or the mind, what happens? It fades. But not only we tolerate, there's a sequence, tongues to tikshu svabharata, but then what are we supposed to do? We withdraw our consciousness from something over there, but we place our consciousness in something over here. Some habit that somebody has. This is a lesson in how to break habits. There's a habit over here. Place your consciousness in something spiritual. Like Prabhupada, in the very beginning, he told his young Western followers a principle of you're prone to smoke cigarettes, then smoke one in the morning and one in the evening. That was how we started. You know, regulate. And then the next instruction was, instead of smoking the cigarette, chant. Give the tongue a better engagement. Principle. So tolerate, regulate, withdraw consciousness and place it purposely something else, somewhere else. Now that's hard to do if a person is a smoker and when he goes to work, everybody's smoking. You know, he has an alcohol habit and he goes to a place where everybody's drinking. You know, it's better to associate with people that aren't. Alcoholics Anonymous group where they're not. Or just the social environment. So it makes it's a challenge if you're trying to break a habit and all around you people are completely absorbed in that habit you're trying to break. Very difficult. But so that the principle, regulate, tolerate, and experience a higher taste. And when there's a higher taste, that taste fades. So withdraw consciousness, place it in something else. Go further than that, one needs a spiritual conception of life, like what's happiness? Is that happiness? Win or lose? Is it happiness? But, you know, knowledge alone is not enough also, because the itch is still there. Long tendency. So then the indication that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita is abhyasa. Like, it's like chanting. If you can practice absorbing your mind in chanting, you can overcome this other attraction. Because in absorbing the mind in chanting, it's not just, you know, cricket when the World Cup is going on, or as far as I know, it's a seasonal thing. Like Western sports, you know, there's baseball season and basketball season and football season, so there's cricket season. So aside, when it's not cricket season, there's something else to take the mind's attention away. So practice, this is a japa tip, abhyasa. And to go more deeply into chanting by practice, it's when there's some feeling. You're experiencing with feeling, taking shelter in the holy name. And there's a very nice hint that built within practice, there's some feeling just to continue to practice. So just stay with practicing and look for the feeling in that practice, or even cultivate. Pick a feeling. Take a feeling. And chant with feeling. Like the feeling can be, I don't chant with feeling. I'm feeling of regret because I'm such a hard person. I'm chanting without any feeling. Or, the last 10 rounds or mantras that I chanted were inattentive. So become attentive with feeling. Like, let me chant this round now, this one right now, and then the next one right now, and the next one right now, with, you can learn a lot about getting rid of bad habits by chanting properly, because it's all in the mind, attraction and repulsion for sense objects is within the mind. So, chaita dharpana marjanam, the best means for cleansing the mind The mirror of the mind is the chanting of the holy name. So that's a spiritual solution. The others are material solutions. Understand their suffering in the material existence. It's not taking the persons that get all involved in cricket anywhere. It's in, you know, la-la land. It's like we were stuck on traffic at 495, so Bihari wanted to check and see, is there an accident ahead? Should we take a detour? And so on the radio was this insulting debate between two parties about political topics, you know, George Bush and Democrats and Republicans. And all day long these people do this stuff. And a lot of people tune in. Yeah, he punched him real good. Oh, he got him back real good. It's a sport, and it's ridiculous. It's insulting. It's offensive. It's demeaning. It's so low. And, you know, they got a radio station for it. So some people are addicted to that. And where's it go? So where's it go? Where does all that go? They just, you know, with knowledge. But we know that knowledge alone is not enough. You probably convince yourself 100,000 times that it's not enough. There's still that residual thing. Now Krishna will help with residual involvements with matter. The chapter, look and meditate on Bhagavad Gita 10, chapter 10, text 11. Aham agyanajam tamaham, with jnana dipena basvata, with the torchlight of knowledge from within, Krishna destroys the darkness born of ignorance. This is turning to Krishna time with something like this. Tesham evanukam partam aham agyanajam tamaham. To those who are engaged constantly, you're striving, Krishna will see that striving and he'll help you. So destroy with the darkness of ignorance with the torchlight of knowledge. He'll illumine your heart and steer you in the right direction. Become attached to Krishna. Best method, chant the holy name. Great attention. So that was the one question. The other question I forgot already.
Right, I think it's almost fixing the holes in the bucket. So I thought I overcome okay. That, like the way in which the environment...
A simple answer with that one is if you have it... A simple answer. But without a spiritual conception, you take some spiritual inspiration, you go to the realities of life and you try to apply that inspiration to the realities of life. If you don't take shelter of a spiritual conception, you apply it in a material way. But you take the spiritual conception is who we really are. Spirit, soul, eternal servant of Krishna. What does this have to do with serving Krishna? Nada, as they say in Spanish. Nothing. Nothing at all. So those things that don't have anything to do with service to Krishna, that goes in the circular file. Just trash it. And then next, you just, you know, move on. But you linger, should I, shouldn't I? Okay. Something else? Yes.
I have two questions.
Okay.
One is about like how to give up conceptions
let's do it again because it's a little distracting.
Okay. How to address I know issue always saying when people talked how to give up your conception and willing to
take another conception. Yeah. How to let go of our conceptions, our misconceptions,
yeah,
in order to receive a spiritual conception.
Yeah, and how...
That's a nice question.
Like, how you, like, And when people talk, I mean, example would be like when someone, like an elder says something, when you're like frustrated or something, you just say, I know, I really don't know anything, and you're not willing to take in what they're saying.
Mm.
And how do you let go?
Wait about 5 years. The spirit of rebelliousness of teenage life just has that part of the chemistry. I'm sure your parents understand that and don't hold that against you. There are several elements, you know, the how-to, there's several elements. One element is trust. Another element is be clear about where you want to go. Another element is try to see beyond the familiarity. In other words, because of being in close proximity to elders, and I'll assume that you're primarily your experience is with your parents, there's a familiarity factor. So try to understand that behind them there's some guidance that they're receiving, and behind that there's, you know, there's real spiritual authority. So it's not just they're speaking on their own behalf, but they're speaking on behalf of the spiritual training that they have received or are receiving. And so when that rebellious spirit from your side is towards the instruction, it's, you know, there's all this other behind them that you're also rebelling from. And that you don't want to do. But there's some tendency to rebel just because of familiarity. So the way to get beyond familiarity, two ways, is see what's behind, but also just respect. The antidote for familiarity is respect. One of the things that Prabhupada taught in helping those who he was trying to train, he taught us that the offering of respect to the spiritual master prevents the disciple from this very, very terrible thing of becoming familiar. And therefore, like with in your home or in wherever there's a temple, when you come before the deity and you leave the presence of the deity, you offer obeisances. And it can become ritualistic, but it's meant to offer respect. Or you come before the spiritual master, you leave the presence of the spiritual master, you offer respect. You recite Srimad Bhagavatam, you offer respect. Because it's fully spiritual. And if you don't do that, then it's familiarity. Even it's Srimad Bhagavatam and the deity and the spiritual master. So familiarity breeds contempt. So even those that are your best of well-wishers, there may be some contempt. I don't want to hear it from you. I already know that. Why you, some spirit of rebelliousness that's due to familiarity. So the antidote for familiarity is respect. There's one young person somewhere out there in the universe who had this very, very, very strong teenage animosity towards his father. And, you know, through just some conversation, he could understand where that was coming from and how that was very unhealthy and unwholesome and very harmful, hurtful for him. So the antidote was then offering his obeisances every morning, going, as in any religion, honor thy mother and father. He just went and offered his obeisances to his mother and father. He felt his mother was much softer and his father was, less. So, not just offer obeisances to your mother, but to your father also. And that has done certain benefit for their relationship, both how he sees his father and how his father sees the son and their relationship. Maybe I'm taking it further than your question was intended, but just step out of your autobiography and look at, wait a minute. I'm spirit soul, and I want Krishna's shelter. And this is not pleasing to Krishna. It's, something like, what does cricket have to do with pleasing Krishna? What does this kind of interaction have to do with pleasing Krishna? Where is that coming from? It's not me. It's not happiness. It's not pleasing Krishna. So let me step out of this rebellious spirit and think of what's pleasing to Krishna. And let me at least cultivate like that. Strive like that. And two other things, from parents or adults that are dealing with this is Prabhupada's teaching. Now this is for your parents' sake. When a young person reaches teenage, then what's advisable for the parent is to the mode of exchange with that individual, that teenager, should change from authority, I'm up here and you're down here, to more like a friend. Now still, superior friend, but the demeanor of the exchange, the mood of the exchange should change. Because a teenager will confide in their friends, but they won't tell their parents many times. So there can be even another adult, but it's just, where there isn't that authority kind of thing. So the parent needs to adjust to the psychology of teenage life and just kind of hang out and be a friend. And when needed, then, make suggestions rather than, hammering or strongly instructing. And when there's that helps the trust and the honesty and the openness and the receptivity. And the second thing is it's always nice to have others in addition to one's parents that one can hear good instructions from. Whether it's a peer or another elder person, someone that's wise, kind of like a mentor kind of relationship. It's always very nice to have in any case, and this is a possible solution. You had another one?
This morning, me and my sister were just like going around, and then I couldn't find something, and then so I just kind of blamed it on her, saying that she took it, and actually I kept it downstairs, and I just kind of blamed it. So how do you not blame others? Like, how do you if you did something wrong, how do you
take responsibility?
Yeah. Find faults in others too.
It's pretty basic. Nice question. I can tell you what works for me, and that's Bhaktisiddhanta's instruction, which you probably have heard before. But I heard it very well from Bhaktisiddhanta because I already had this enormous respect for Bhaktisiddhanta. He had an article of his that I read when I was in college helped me become a devotee. in short. I was so powerful that I didn't know who or where, you know, what planet Bhakti Siddhanta was on, what realm of realization, but just that he was someone I really respected. So when I read this, the following statement, my heart was already open to Bhakti Siddhanta, who said, "A Vaishnava never finds fault in others, for by so doing, he's pointing to the very same fault within his own heart." Say it the other way around. If one is pure, one is not engaged in fault finding. If one is engaged in fault finding, the reason is one's own heart is honeycombed with the same fault. The next sentence was, "Therefore, a Vaishnava always looks within as their natural Vaishnava-like quality, saying, here's a situation. This situation is, I'm feeling uncomfortable in this situation. Let me look within my own heart and see, why is that feeling? What is this contamination? Is there some contamination in my own heart that's making me feel this way?" Just reflex. You know, reflex, like someone hits your knee and woo! You don't have to make your leg go up, it just goes up. It's reflex. So, a reflex for a Vaishnava is there's something that you encounter that, whether it's your sister or somebody else or whatever's going on, something is troubling me. Look within. And make this place pure. That's first business. Make the heart pure. And when the heart is pure, or when you're complete with that activity of making the heart pure, then you can, with a purified heart or proper vision, look at the situation around you. And your next question is, what can I do to help elevate this situation? If I can't, it's because my heart is not sufficiently pure. But if my heart is sufficiently pure, surely Krishna will inspire me how I can do or say something that makes the situation better. It's the same idea of, as in a leadership position, establishing character in the dynamic of this exchange with another. How can I make the situation better? Then you're in the mood of a servant. You're not in the mood of pointing fingers. You don't have to do that at all in life. Vaishnava doesn't. Now, the exception to that is, scripturally, for purposes of training, Prabhupada writes, this is spiritual teacher, spiritual master, may point out certain things in others for protection of the person in their care, so that they can understand, you know, this is not a healthy situation over there. Be on guard. But that should be the mood of the parent, or the teacher, or the spiritual master, or whoever, the instructor. Not, look at that fault, look at that fault, look at that fault, look at that fault. Fault finding without the right... I mean, it's not good from any position. For the purpose of protection of one who is in one's care and training, that may be, that's not even always appropriate, but it may be okay. So, that's just... So if you have some exchange with your sister and you see that something needs to be attended to, even, you know, if you show by your example your willingness to acknowledge before your sister your own shortcomings and mistakes in this regard, you'll find she's going to be much more likely to do that too, just by your example. And even if not, it's not that there's some loss. You lost some points and she won some points. And who's the scorekeeper? Purity is what we want. Anything else? Yes. Go ahead.
Maharaj, thank you very much for the class. It was very nice. I have this question. I'm just trying to apply this. You see the family members as devotees to acknowledge the Super Soul in their heart and give respect. But especially with the children, I mean, every time when they go to school, till they come, I just prepare my consciousness. But after some time, like, I just come to my normal self. I'm not
okay, this is the same point as we were speaking about earlier in the class. There's some inspiration. I want to be in the right mood. And some time passes and that mood seems to have just went away somewhere. But one has to become attached to Krishna and serving Krishna. And that's who we are. That's what I say, spiritual conception, that's what it means. Krishna is my shelter. And for the satisfaction of Krishna, I want to do this. So while I'm doing this, I want to stay connected with satisfying Krishna. Or you can expand the nomenclature and, you know, Krishna and the Vaishnavas. Or Guru and Krishna. Because Krishna is not alone. So so as you extend yourself, you're still staying energized or connected to that inspiration, that purpose. And then when that exchange is done or the task is done, you're still connected and you go on to the next task, but you stay connected to the next challenge that you have to meet. When the kids are home, now comes my husband and now comes, you know, serving, you know, whatever else you have to do. You stay centered on that. And that's a spiritual conception of who I am. I have different roles to play and different challenges within those different roles. But that's the spiritual conception from which I work. Cultivate like that and you're deepening your relationship with Krishna. Even in ordinary things. Otherwise, it's like the mode of passion, but the inspiration fizzles because I just got real excited about going ahead and doing something like a fruitive worker, and you know, I'm going to make it happen, and you forget the person that you're serving. The connection with Krishna is broken or forgotten. Keep that. And that stays always, or cultivate at least, that stays always in the primary position. Each thing I do. So many roles, so many duties. Yes. Would you like the microphone? By practice and everything that you do. Start with your chanting. And your hearing. And take up your hearing in that spirit. When you open up or you're listening, you're hearing some recordings or something like that. Before you begin, place your consciousness in that submission. Krishna is going to, Prabhupada is going to deliver Krishna to me. I want my receptacle, Krishna receiver, tuned in. And keep it tuned in. Keep that spirit, that submission unto Krishna. You practice very carefully like that with hearing and chanting. And you'll find it will flow very, very naturally into the other activities of your life. Depending upon Krishna. both in success and failure. Because if you don't think like that, when there's success, you just become exhilarated, and when there's failure, you have to become miserable. So it's depending upon Krishna. And you, when you carefully read the scriptures, you'll find that's the mood. Of there isn't an exception. Very kindly, Vyas has captured those moods of elevated souls, and they're not only speaking the words, they're feeling themselves dependent upon Krishna. And you take inspiration from that. That's the beacon light off in the darkness. And I'm way over here in this place of darkness. Let me go towards that. So that's the inspiration. And now stay in that frame. That mood, frame of mind, spirit, and keep moving towards that each day, each thing that you do. Cultivate. Abhyasa again, practice. And within that abhyasa, there's some feeling. I'm getting closer to the goal. Oh, I just went way over to the left. I got lost. Because I got so caught up in myself and trying to do it that I forgot Krishna. Or I got distracted by the cricket match or whatever. Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.